this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Lisa Maxwell for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Education Today. For the next half hour, I will be reading education and related news from North Carolina and the nation for our blind, print impaired, and sighted community. The first article I want to read for you today comes from the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction, and this article was released on February 25th of 2026. Chase High Team wins 2026 NC Junior Chef competition. While five high school finalist teams competed in the annual North Carolina Junior Chef Cook-Off this month to create unique school lunch entree recipes, the gold standard team from Chase High School of Rutherford County Schools won first place in the 2026 NC Junior Chef competition. Their egg roll in a bowl recipe won top honors in the competition and a silver medal. The Chase High team worked to create a recipe that takes the best parts of an egg roll, savory chicken, crisp veggies, and tangy sauce, and serves it up in a nutritious way. Packed with protein and whole grains, this dish is lighter, fresher, and just as flavorful. The recipe featured North Carolina cabbage, onions, and peppers, along with USDA Foods chicken and long grain brown rice. The team also showed off their knife and presentation skills by pairing with a North Carolina apple cut into a swan. The Taste Bud Trailblazers team from Irwin High School of Buncombe County Schools won second place and a silver medal for their sweet and spicy vegetarian sweet spadilla, a warm golden grilled whole grain quesadilla filled with creamy sweet potatoes, seasoned black beans, and a bold blend of cheeses paired with a kale and apple salad. The food vendors from Martin County High School of Martin County Schools won third place and a silver medal with their Gator Island Bowl, a flavorful curry chicken. That's a flavorful curry chicken featuring island spices served on a warm rice medley. Fourth place went to the Whisk Takers from South Lenoir High of Lenoir County Schools for their comfort food classic Cheesy Chicken Waffle Bowl, paired with sautéed collards and the Blazing Bulldogs. From Thomasville Senior High School, from Thomasville City Schools, took fifth place for their creative, flavorful jerk chicken with mofongo. All teams showcased their knowledge and skills in the culinary competition. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Maurice Mo Green offered his congratulations to all teams. I want to commend all of the students who participated in the 2026 NC Junior Chef competition, Green said. This competition provides exposure to future career options and showcases students' critical thinking, creativity, and collaboration skills, as well as technical skills learned in the classroom. The high school students were challenged to work with their teachers and school nutrition administrators to develop a creative recipe for a school lunch entree that met a list of requirements. Compliant with school nutrition program standards included at least two North Carolina-grown products and one USDA Foods item, replicable by school nutrition programs and appealing to students. For the competition, all finalist teams submitted an application to the North Carolina Department of Public Instruction, or NCDPI, with their recipe photo, nutrient and cost analysis, a work plan for preparing the entree within 90 minutes, and a video of their team preparing and plating their creation. The junior chefs also participated in a virtual interview to present their entree to a panel of evaluators. Teams were evaluated on their recipe development, use of locally grown ingredients, culinary and food safety skills, organization, knowledge of nutrition and farm to school, teamwork, and public presentation. In working with our local school nutrition programs, students learn about and appreciate all that goes on behind the scenes to create recipes for school meals that not only meet required nutrition guidelines, but also appeal to students, NCDPI's Senior Director for School Nutrition said, Rachel Finley. In addition, they learn about farm to school and how schools and farms can work together to provide agriculture and nutrition education and incorporate locally grown foods in school meals. NC Junior Chef finalist teams were recognized in a virtual award ceremony. The students received their own NC Junior Chef coats and hats. Students also received certificates and medals based on team scores. First, second, and third place teams received plaques to display in their schools, and the first place team has the honor of hosting the competition trophy until the next cook-off. Sullivan University in Kentucky will offer scholarships to the members of the top three teams. The first place NC Junior Chef team will also advance to compete at the regional level in the Southeast Junior Chef competition at Jefferson State Community College in Alabama in April. I have an article from the National Organization for Albinism and Hypopigmentation, or NOAA. And this article is about helpful tips for grandparents. Grandparents of children with albinism take on many different roles and responsibilities depending on the family dynamics and norms. It is important that when defining these roles for your family that you follow the lead of your son or daughter while meeting your own needs. Adapting to a diagnosis of albinism requires education, support, love, and time. Each person has their own way of coping and learning, therefore respecting this process and all family members is very important. Following are a few suggestions to keep in mind during the journey ahead. Take care of yourself. As a grandparent, you may feel overwhelmed with concern for your child and for your grandchild. Feelings of sadness, fear, helplessness, and anger are normal. Take some time to process how you are feeling so that you can be a support for the family. Support and encourage both your grandchild and your own child. Acknowledge the progress and celebrate the successes. Don't borrow trouble. Stay in the present. Remember, you only need to know how to handle the immediate phase in front of you and stay one step ahead. Offer to help your son or daughter in any way that is needed. Remember that their version of help may be different from yours. Stay flexible. Let them know by your affirming and supportive attitude that you have confidence in their ability to parent a child with albinism. Don't forget to tell them you love them and think they are doing a wonderful job of being a parent. Remind yourself they are learning also. Educate yourself about albinism. Don't just rely on busy parents to answer your questions about albinism. Be prepared to answer questions yourself about your grandchild's appearance or vision. Increase awareness of albinism by educating your colleagues, neighbors, friends, and family. Ask questions and try new things. There are a few adjustments your grandchild with albinism may need. Ask about making the physical environment comfortable for your grandchild. Small changes can be very helpful. Whenever possible, let your grandchild figure things out for themselves and find their own creative solutions. Encourage your grandchild to be a problem solver. Ask them what they think will work if there is a visual challenge. How would they solve the problem? Don't make the job harder than it is. Being a grandparent to a child with albinism doesn't require special skills. The most important thing about your grandchild isn't that they have albinism, but that they are a unique human being to be treasured for exactly who they are. Remember that low vision is normal for your grandchild. It is all they have ever known. They will naturally adapt by doing things like holding objects closer to them or physically standing closer to things such as the TV, preferring a darker room over a brighter one, exploring their environment more tactically than visually. Functional vision is different than actual eye exam vision test. Kids often see more than you expect them to. Their brains and experience fill in the gaps. Have faith that your grandchild with albinism will learn to succeed at normal childhood activities like riding a bike, participating in sports, learning to read, finding their way around the neighborhood, making friends, etc. Don't sit with a worry. Ask for help. Tap into the shared companionship and knowledge of the larger NOAA community. Share any concerns you may have with a NOAA grandparent or member. Make friends with adults with albinism and listen to their stories. Go to a NOAA conference, watch a webinar, participate in a bowl-a-thon. Join NOAA's Grandparent Connections teleconferences to hear from specialists and other grandparents. And last, give back. Volunteer for NOAA. Participate in the annual NOAA Bowl-a-thon and or volunteer to help in other ways. Parents are often too busy to do this. Your help means NOAA resources will be there for your grandchild when and if they are needed. Our next article comes from the North Carolina Association of Educators, and it is titled, NCAE Releases Vision for the Future of Public Schools, and this was published on February 24th of 2026. In a newly released report, the North Carolina Association of Educators, or NCAE, outlines a vision for what North Carolina's public schools could achieve with full, sustained investment. Titled Public Schools, Public Good, What North Carolina Can Achieve When We Fully Invest in Our Children, the report highlights the extraordinary work taking place in public schools across the state despite chronic underinvestment. Over the last decade, North Carolina has moved to prioritize tax cuts for corporations and private school subsidies over sustained investments into public schools. Since 2013, state leaders have enacted a series of laws that have steadily reduced personal income tax rates and has set the state on the path to eliminate the corporate income tax completely by 2030. This is despite income taxes making up more than half of North Carolina's funding for public services, including public education. As a result of these tax policies, North Carolina is now losing nearly $18 billion in revenue annually. These policies are preventing state revenue collection to keep pace with the cost of providing high-quality public services and maintain infrastructure needed to meet North Carolina's ongoing population growth. At the same time, state leaders have dramatically expanded private school vouchers through the Opportunity Scholarship Program. What was once a targeted program to help low-income families has now become an entitlement program for wealthy private school families. North Carolina spent more than $432 million on vouchers in the last school year alone, and the program is projected to cost the state more than $7 billion by 2033. These choices constrain per-student funding, suppress educator pay, and widen disparities between districts, outcomes driven not by economic necessity, but by deliberate fiscal priorities. As a result, North Carolina consistently ranks near the bottom nationally for education funding effort, per-pupil spending, and educator pay when adjusted for inflation. These rankings translate into real consequences. Students and attending schools without enough counselors, limited course offerings, and aging facilities. Educators managing overcrowded classrooms, inadequate planning time, and working multiple jobs just to make ends meet. These policy decisions have fueled an ongoing crisis in recruiting and retaining educators across the state. While this is the reality facing North Carolina today, the future can look very different if the state reverses course and fully funds its public schools. Research consistently shows that sustained investments in public education lead to improved academic outcomes, higher graduation rates, and greater long-term economic mobility, especially for students from low-income backgrounds and communities of color. With increased predictable and equitable funding, North Carolina's public schools can offer smaller class sizes, competitive educator pay, and enriched learning opportunities that prepare students for life beyond the classroom. The result would be stronger communities, a more stable workforce, and a more prosperous North Carolina. For too long, our state leadership has starved and neglected our public schools, said Tamika Walker Kelly, NCAE president. We know, just as our students know, our educators know, the research shows and public opinion shows that public schools are the heart of our communities. With a proper investment in our public schools, we can ensure that our children, working class families, and our communities will have a bright future that makes North Carolina the best state in the nation. The next article I want to share with you comes from the Provincial Center for the Visually Impaired, and this is about handheld video magnifiers. Many students with low vision find handheld optical magnifiers a valuable tool for reading and viewing small objects. But some students may need more adjustable magnification, a larger field of view, or color and contrast adjustments that optical magnifiers don't offer. For these students, handheld video magnifiers may be a valuable addition to their low vision toolkit. Handheld video magnifiers come in a range of styles with screens that range in size from 3 to 8 inches. Some units are placed directly on the material being read, while others include fold-out handles that allow them to be held like a traditional magnifier. These modes may be helpful for different tasks. Placing a unit directly on the material being read may be useful for reading a recipe, while using a unit with a handle may be helpful while reading the preparation instructions on a can of soup. Handheld video magnifiers offer some flexibility above what an optical magnification device offers. 1. Adjustable magnification range. Optical magnifiers have a set magnification level, such as 3 times or 5 times. In contrast, Handheld video magnifiers have an adjustable range of magnification levels. For example, the Compact Plus HD magnification ranges from 3 times to 11 times and can be adjusted continuously, while the Visolux Digital HD magnification ranges from 2 times to 22 times in steps or continuous zoom. Number 2. Adjustable colors. Some students with low vision find inverted colors, such as white text on a black background or other color combinations, much easier to read. Handheld video magnifiers can display text and background in a variety of color combinations. Some units offer several dozen combinations, which can be adjusted to select the student's preferences through the unit's menus. Number 3. Wide field of view. As magnification level increases, the visible field of view decreases. Video magnifiers with larger screen sizes, such as 7 or 8 inch screen, can provide a wider field of view compared to handheld optical magnifiers of the same power. Like optical magnifiers, handheld video magnifiers are best used for short reading tasks, such as checking price tags or scanning a menu. Other technologies, such as a desktop video magnifier or accessible digital materials, are more suitable for longer reading tasks, such as handouts and textbooks. Like all low-vision devices, it is important that students try a variety of devices to determine what works best for their visual access needs. At the Children's Low Vision Program, students have an opportunity to view a variety of magnification devices, ranging from handheld optical devices to handheld and desktop video magnifiers. These days, many smartphones offer similar functionality to handheld video magnifiers, but depending on the student, it can be helpful to have a dedicated device with a high-resolution camera. Students can work with their teacher of students with visual impairments to determine which magnification devices work best for various tasks throughout their day and develop proficient use of each device in their low vision toolkit. From the American Foundation for the Blind, I actually have a film review for you, and this was published January 23rd of 2026, and it's regarding Vivian's Wild Ride. In Vivian's Wild Ride, renowned editor and documentarian Vivian Hillgrove offers a powerful cinematic memoir chronicling a life shaped by the reality of going blind. The film, which premieres with audio description on January 26 as part of the Independent Lens series on PBS, rises above the disability tropes often found in documentaries that capture the experiences of people facing life-changing challenges. While the film does delve into Vivian's journey into sight loss, resonating with the flood of emotions so many of us who have gone blind have similarly faced, it resists framing that journey as a narrative designed to elicit sympathy or inspiration from the audience, or in the case of this writer, the listener. Instead, Hillgrove demonstrates her own gift as an auteur within the art of documentary filmmaking, using her blindness as a driver of narrative as she carries us through the varying chapters of her life. The result is a wild ride that rises and falls through the troughs and crests of love and loss. Along the way, we encounter the major plot twist of her life, the loss of her daughter, whom she was forced to give up for adoption as a young teenage mother, their meeting for the first time decades later, Vivian's journey breaking through the gender gap in the film industry, and how she and the love of her life reinvented themselves amid the tranquil paths winding through their own Garden of Eden, far removed from the chaos and noise of San Francisco. The film moves quickly, carrying us from chapter to chapter, not always in chronological order, but rather tethered to the present. This approach pulls the audience into the story through shared emotions that are fundamentally human, those universal realities rooted in love and loss. It is here that Vivian delivers one of the film's most powerful messages, not something that necessarily inspires, but something that offers a solace as we wrestle with life's highs and lows, the truth that joy and sadness can coexist. Alongside the accolades highly earned for the film's many achievements, unsurprisingly, the editing is superb under the direction of a world-class editor. I would like to draw particular attention to the sound design. The work of the sound editors and mixers elevates the storytelling in subtle but profound ways. Leading the sound team was sound designer and effects editor William Sammons, alongside supervising sound designer James Lebrecht, with sound mixing by Greg Francis at IMRSV Sound. The music was composed by Ted Bockelhide, who received an Oscar in 1985 for Best Sound in Amadeus, and he does an excellent job as well, building on major and minor themes to carry forward the joy and sadness that rise and fall during the film. I am not sure how much of what I heard was intentional or subconscious. After all, Vivian began her career as a sound editor. What stood out to me, however, was how the sound consistently captured and echoed the emotions unfolding on screen. For example, when we travel with Vivian as she learns to navigate the world as a new traveler relying on a mobility cane, the sound of automobiles racing alongside her stokes emotions. Vividly recall myself the first time I crossed 5 lanes of traffic, counting steps at every turn to avoid losing my way. Later, walking with Vivian through her garden, the soundscape shifts entirely, transporting me to a sanctuary that feels worlds apart from the chaos of busy intersections. In the end, Vivian's Wild Ride is a moving documentary that is far more than the story of a cinematic artist losing her sight. It captures the part in all of us that searches for joy when sadness settles in. It is the mirror every gifted editor uses, reflecting the director's vision into stories that resonate most deeply with the audience. Our shared humanity revealed through the magic of sight and sound. We have run out of time for today's episode of Education Today. We hope you enjoyed listening, and please join us next time. I'm Lisa Maxwell, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Education Today is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, or you have ideas for a session, please call 919-832-5138. And again, that number is 919-832-5138. And we thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.